chapter 39 and 40. Does anybody need a copy of the lesson? Need a copy of the lesson? Let Craig know and he'll get you a copy. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your presence tonight. We continue our study. Very interesting portion of Scripture history. A lot of real practical lessons for us. Hope that they'll be beneficial. Before we begin our study tonight, we want to go to our Heavenly Father in prayer. We'll ask Brother Bill Ralph to stand and lead our minds. Chapter 39 begins where chapter 37 left off. So if you back up, skip back past chapter 38, go back to the end of chapter 37. You'll remember in chapter 37, Joseph's brother sold him to some traders, Midianite traders, verse 28. Ishmaelites, and then they took him to Egypt, verse 36, and there they sold him to Potiphar, Pharaoh's officer, captain of the bodyguard. Then we skip over to chapter 39. 38, as we noted in our last class, is not written in chronological order either. The events that are stated predate chapter 37 or extend beyond chapter 39. There's just not enough time in between for the events of chapter 38. But they lay the foundation and explain how it is that Tamar came to be in the Messianic line. And so that information becomes valuable later on. It also gives us more insight into the nature of Joseph's brothers. So let's take the four oldest brothers. So Who are they? Do you remember who the four oldest brothers are? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Let's take the two middle ones. What do you know about them thus far? Simeon and Levi. What? Kill the people in Shechem. That's right. And so now, what do you know about the oldest one thus far, Reuben? Slept with his father's concubine. What do you know about the fourth one? Judah. Slept with his daughter-in-law. What chance is there for Joseph to turn out good anyway? That's his four older brothers. And yet you see a remarkable young man here in Joseph. So now his brothers have sold him into slavery. And here he is down in Egypt, sold to Potiphar, the captain of the guard. So we pick up chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Now this statement in verse 2 is very significant. Joseph has already suffered terrible injustices. He grew up in a family where he was hated unjustly. He grew up among brothers who were jealous of him unjustly. He grew up in a family where they couldn't speak peaceably to him, and it wasn't his fault. And then now, at 17 years old, he's been violently stripped of the coat his dad made him, thrown in the pit, and now sold into slavery. All that time, all these things were happening to this young man. Where's God? That's right. The Lord was with Joseph. And so, you wonder, how could the Lord be with him with all these things happening? And sometimes people, and this question was asked in the Bible at times. You know, why, if God is with us, why are these things happening? Of course, Job asked that question, didn't he? Was it Gideon, I believe it was, asked that question. And we may not understand the providence of God, what he allows. But we have evidence that God can work through our lives even with circumstances we don't understand and maybe do not like. The question is, can our faith in God, is there enough evidence, even though I can't explain some things, is there enough evidence, number one, to believe that there is a God, an almighty being we call God? Is there enough evidence to believe that he's good and worthy of my praise and adoration? And is there enough evidence to believe that he keeps his word, that he's faithful, that he has my interest at heart? And if I believe that, in spite of all the things I cannot explain, maybe I can pursue the path this young man pursued and became an example to everyone after him. So it says, the Lord was with Joseph. We suggested in your marking, you mark that through the chapter, and you have it again in verse 3. The Lord was with him. You have it again down in verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph. And verse 23, the Lord was with him. You have those four times, but you have some additional statements in the chapter 2 that Moses used to further emphasize that God is involved in this young man's life. And those statements are statements like this. In verse 3, when his master saw how the Lord was with him and how the Lord called. The Lord called. Everything or all that he did to prosper in his hand. The Lord called him. Moses is writing later. He's writing by the power of the Holy Spirit. He is explaining the behind the scenes. Why are these things happening? not simply out of Joseph's expertise. He was evidently a very committed, very trustworthy young man, but God's hand is in it. The Lord caused everything he did to prosper. Down in verse 5, you have a couple other statements. You see in the middle of the verse, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house. Again in verse 5, the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned. Potiphar was prospering because of this young man and his household that the Lord was blessing, and he was receiving the benefits from that. And then down at the end of the chapter, verse 23, a statement right at the end, it says, whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. So whether in Potiphar's house as a servant or in prison, the Lord was with him in what happened. That's going to be strange in chapter 40. And yet, once again, the Lord was with him in the things that transpired there. So that's a significant phrase. And so, I have on your lesson some figures. We'll not go through all of those. But at this time in Joseph's life, it's chapter 39 and 40, he's somewhere between 17 and 28 years of age. And so, I don't know at least how long he was in Potiphar's house. We know he was at least 2 years in prison. How much longer, I don't know. But we know he became ruler when he was 30. And it was 2 years before that when he had interpreted the dream. So that makes that 20, I get you to 28. So 17 when he sold, and 28 when he interpreted the dream for the butler. And so sometime between 17 and 28. So you try to envision an 18-year-old boy, 20-year-old boy, 24-year-old boy experiencing what this young man was experiencing here. And that young man, this is not an old, aged veteran of God. This is not an Elijah, Elisha, young man. And yet you see his commitment to God, his moral courage. We'll talk some more about that as we go through the chapter. But his age can be an encouragement to parents who are trying to raise children in an ungodly world and maybe without the help of a family. In fact, maybe in spite of the negative influences of a family, a young man can turn out good. The one key, faith in God. That's the key. Faith in God. And that's what seemed to control this young man. Okay, so verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. So, and just a kind of passing note, it's just for purposes of helping us in Bible interpretation. I'm reading the New American Standard Version. It has the word so. Some of you have the King James Version. Some of you have the New King James Version. Instead of the word so, what does it have? And we've talked about this in numerous classes and sermons, that when you see the word and in the Bible, it can have a number of different significations. And this is a case in point where the translators recognize it. And so instead of translating and, they use the word so, which is the idea of, it's a logical consequence of what's happening. And, not just one and two, but the Lord was with Joseph, and as a result, or therefore, the conclusive and, therefore, or so, he became a successful man. And so our translators want the readers to understand the close link between those two phrases. So instead of using the word and, they use the word so. Either way is fine. So is somewhat of an interpretation, but it's on the right track. All right. So when you hear me or somebody else talk about the word and with different significations, recognize that even your own Bibles, your translators recognize that. And that's sometimes seen in the translation itself. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him. Now, just the very fact that he was a slave. When we talk about being a slave, how does that make you feel to even think about being somebody's slave? You know, that's just distasteful to you. We live in the United States of America. And with many people, our God is freedom. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I am free. As Mr. Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. Well, that sounds great, but that's not necessarily the motto of a servant of God. He's a slave, but he adapts to the circumstances. You see in 1 Peter 2, that letter was written to people who were slaves. He doesn't tell them to start marching. He doesn't tell them to gather an army for their freedom. He tells them how to live in those circumstances. Yes, isn't it? Okay. Slavery, as far as I know, in and of itself is not. The problem is it leads to so many abuses, and that's the problem. If you go back and read the period of the Civil War before, for some of those people, slavery was a real plus. They had no education. They had no money. A good slave owner, a good one, would take somebody like that, feed them, give them a place to live, clothe them, protect them. You say, but there were so many abuses. Yes, there were. And that's where slavery gets its bad name. There were slaves who could have been set free that chose not to be set free because they understood that they were better off serving their master. Are you a slave? Yes, you are. That's right. Slave of Christ. You can't have a better situation than to be a slave of Christ, a bond servant. New Testament writers talk about that often. Anyway, Joseph is a slave in this man's house. And so his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. How much Pharaoh came to know about the Lord as a result of this, I do not know. Moses doesn't tell us, but it's interesting that Moses says he recognized that he was being blessed. Whether or not he understood it was the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I do not know. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. You know, sometimes people live a blessed life and they think that's God's approval of my faith or my belief or whatever. It may not be that at all. It may be because of the people that you're in contact with. Pharaoh was blessed because of Joseph. Not because of Pharaoh. Potiphar. And so, interesting, because of his connection with Joseph. And so, verse 6, he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge, and with him there he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. I'd ask you on the questions at the end of the lesson. How Potiphar felt about Joseph before the incident with his wife. There's the answer. He had absolute confidence in him. Absolute trust in him. Think about this a moment. We know he was 17 when he was sold. Is he 18 now? Is he 20? I don't know. But to a man who never met him, of a different race, in a different country, this young man has proved himself in his conduct to be absolutely trustworthy and competent and committed,
so much so the guy says, I ain't worried about anything. How many young men do you know at 18 or 20 or 22 years old have that sense of responsibility and commitment? So many of them are still interested in, if they go to college, they're not interested in college, they're interested in playing around the social scene. Many of them are interested in video games and watching TV. Some are committed to sports. How many of them would you trust to put in charge of your business and just leave it? This says something about this young man. Timothy. Do you remember when Paul began his second journey, how he felt about Timothy? What does the New Testament say? Do you remember? Sir? He was a son of the faith. And what did he say about Timothy? He wanted that young man to go with him. There was a young man went with him on the first journey. He said, I don't want that guy to go with me. Why? Because he left him. Independable in Paul's view. What does that say about Timothy? If he wants him to go with him, he had proved himself. At that time, Timothy may have been 18. Not if he was 20. He was barely in his 20s. What kind of daddy did he have? Evidently a pagan, unbeliever. But he had a mother and a grandmother instilled what in him? Faith. Paul said, I am mindful of the sincere faith. Welcome to your mother and your grandmother. Faith is the key. Where did he grow up? A good Christian town? Lystra. Idolaters. Faith is the key. And so here's this young man at a young age to learn responsibility. There's nothing wrong with parents today teaching their young men that life doesn't have to be dedicated to playing ball and watching TV and video games and having fun at college. But to learn responsibility and commitment and duty where people can depend upon you. And this young man had that. So, verse 6, a statement here. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. 18, 20, 22, young man, handsome young man. So, it came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. Now, this version translates, looked with desire. But over in the margin, it says, lifted up her eyes at. Literally. Some versions say, lifted up her eyes with desire, something like that. She looked at this young man. He really looked good to her. When I teach on modesty, you've heard me tell the story if you've been here very long. One of the times I preached on it, about women and their immodest dress and how it affects men, young men. Standing at the back, some young women that were in the audience came out and said, why don't you say something about the men and the way they dress? And I said, are you telling me and will you stand by the fact that you think that affects women? He said, yes. I'm not saying he was immodest. I'm saying that this we generally associate with looking at a person stirring up desire just on the man's part. What is there in Houston, Texas that tells you it goes both ways? What? What kind of calendars do they sell? Fireman calendars, and they're all real nice dressed, aren't they? No, they're there for women to look at. What that says is, Matt talked about this in one of his sermons, that men need to think about this as well as women. Again, it may not be your fault. Like in this case, it wasn't Joseph's fault. It wasn't anything he was doing. But it's just the reality of life. There's a statement you're all familiar with about the appointment of David as king. God looks upon the heart, but man looks on what? Outward appearance. That's just the way we are. Now, that could be a good thing in a right marriage, can't it? Okay, I know that my mate looks at my outward appearance, so what should you do? Take care of it. That's right. Take care of it as best you can. You get older, they must take care of, but do the best you can. That's right. Yes, sir. Okay. Right. Certainly. An impure desire. So he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he's put all that he owns in my charge. There's no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Now, it's evil because it's immoral. But he's looking at another reason also. What is it? What? Why, though? He's pointing out another reason besides the immorality of it. What? I guess my question's not good. What is he pointing out here to this woman? Well, that's not wrong. Look, he says, my master has put everything under my control. He didn't even think about things. It's all given to me. I have a responsibility to my master. For me to do this would be a violation of that trust and that confidence that he has placed in me. That would be a sin against God to treat my master that way. What would happen if people took that attitude today? When they're committed, when somebody entrusts them responsibility at work, in the family, wherever it may be, in the church, that somebody trusted me enough to entrust me with responsibility, and I owe it to treat that person accordingly. Isn't that what Joseph is looking at? This would not be right. This man has left everything in my charge except you. I can't do this. That's a sin against God. Sir? Be a better place? Oh, yeah, it would be if people could recognize that. Yes, it would be. You're right, isn't it? That's certainly true. Verse 10 is interesting. Yes. Yeah, and the particular relationship here, he's talking about not just that he's his neighbor. He's trusted me. He's put all this in my charge. Does that not imply that Joseph feels a responsibility? It does. You know, he didn't say, "I think I can hide this. Let's do it." Even if I can hide it, it's not right. You do what is right. That's one of the statements, by the way, that occurred over and over again, 1 Peter 2 and 3. You do what is right. So anyway, verse 10, she spoke to Joseph day by day. She didn't give up. She kept on. What in the world do you reckon she said? How did she dress? You wonder, don't you? Day by day. He did not listen to her, to lie beside her, and that last phrase is important. Or be with him. What does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 6:18 about immorality? What admonition did he give? Flee immorality. You know what that word, our English word, that is derived from that word flee. You know what it is, don't you? What? Fugitive. Does a fugitive go drink coffee with the police in front of the police station? He stays away. And he was trying to avoid any circumstances. See? In Proverbs 7, you remember the story in Proverbs 7 about the young man and the adulterous woman? Do you remember where he said he walked? By our house. Oh, yeah. Walked by our house. Stay out of the places. Stay away from the people that invite him around. Joseph's a slave. He can't leave. But he's trying to avoid immorality. And so, happened one day, went into the house to do his work. He had to do this. None of the men of the household was there inside. One of the things that we tell young preachers, never, ever go visit a woman by yourself. Never. Even if she wants to be baptized, you don't go by yourself. Look what can happen. Now, Joseph didn't have a choice. He had to go in. But it sets the stage for this kind of woman. And so, she caught him by the garment and said, "Lie with me." He left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, she called the men of her household and said to them, "See, he's brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. When he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." So she left his garment beside her until the master came home. Then she spoke to him with these words, "The Hebrew slave who you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. I raised my voice and screamed. He left his garment beside me and fled outside." So when the master heard the words of his wife, where she spoke to him, saying, "This is what your slave did to me," his anger burned. Stop there for just a minute. Put yourself in the shoes of the men of her household. So she calls you in and says, "Look what this Hebrew boy done to me." Do you believe her? Yeah, but you don't know. I tell you what you do, you go and tell other people what he did. Is that what you do? Warning. Be careful about what you hear and be careful about repeating. What they heard wasn't true. There's no way for him to prove his innocence. There's no video. You know, they didn't have a camera in the house. Yeah. It doesn't say they're in the house. Very possible. I don't know. There's no data. I wouldn't be surprised if you're right that she maybe done this with others. I don't know. But it would be so easy to pick up that story and repeat it when there was nothing to it. Be careful that we don't get caught in that. What does the word Satan the word devil, what does that mean? Deceit, slanderer. So when we slander somebody, we act like the devil. Think about that. So anyway, and so he was angry. You know, I've read this for years, and I think he was angry at Joseph. Maybe he was. Maybe it wasn't all at Joseph. Joseph, if he really believed this story fully, what could he have done with Joseph? He could have had him killed. And you know what else is interesting? When you get to chapter 40 and verse 4, once he's in jail, who puts Joseph in charge of the other prisoners? Who was the captain of the bodyguard in 39:1? Potiphar. I don't know if it's the same guy, but if it is, you know, Potiphar may be the very thing Don's talking about. He knew his wife. Maybe they didn't have a very good marriage. And maybe he was angry, not just at Joseph, but at her. But what's he going to do? You know? So he throws Joseph in jail. Anyway. And it may be a back to that deal about we talked about previous classes. We don't have the courage to stand up against blood. It's my family. I don't know. Todd? You don't believe in relying on circumstantial evidence? Really? Have you ever seen Jesus? You don't have any direct evidence then, do you? So I guess you can't believe in Jesus. You believe in Jesus because of circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence can be misused. Can direct evidence mislead you? Has anybody ever thought they saw somebody when they didn't? Yes, sir. That's on my mind, Todd, because I'm reading a book right now by a detective called Cold Case Christianity. He points that very thing out. That's what the cases he solved based on circumstantial evidence. Can that lead us to a wrong conclusion? It can, just like this case. But circumstantial evidence, when you gather all the facts and they're rightly interpreted, can lead you to the truth. Okay. You had a comment? That's true. Of course, as I think one, I don't know if it's on, somebody said, how are they going to question the master's wife, you know, put doubt on her and tell them what would happen to them anyway. But yeah, that's a good point, you know. And so Joseph needed a good lawyer. Now that's a challenge. Finding a good one. Okay, Linda. We can let, Linda's got a good point, we can let false charges completely destroy us. Joseph could have. He could have got bitter. He could have got discouraged. He could have got depressed. What's the use? I've tried to live right. I stood firm in my family. I didn't partake in my brother's evil. You know, he brought a bad report. What did he get him? And he could have just got discouraged. He said, this world's so corrupt, there's no use in me trying anymore. Linda's point is excellent. He did not let that discourage him from serving God. That's an excellent point. Yes. Yes, it does. Prove his faith. That's right. And so, that's an excellent observation. All right. So, anyway, he's in prison. And, of course, he's the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge. All the prisoners who were in the jail and so forth. So, Lord continued to witness. So we're now in chapter 40. And you have these two men who had these two dreams, a cupbearer and a baker. So the cupbearer's dream. We had asked you on the bottom of the lesson backside there to note their two dreams. And of course, they had these dreams, verse 6. They're dejected about them. It's interesting in verse 8. And it said it shows his faith. Linda pointed out, in spite of everything that's happened to him, look at the man still exhibiting faith in God. He said in verse 8, do not interpretation belong to God? Tell it to me, please. What? You still believe God cares about you? Yes. Man, what a young man. And so these two guys told these dreams, the cupbearer's dream, of course. There was a grapes on these three branches. They bore fruit. He took the fresh grapes and squeezed them in Pharaoh's cup. And so Joseph, verse 12. This is the interpretation of the three branches. Question, has Joseph ever served in Pharaoh's court? No. Turn to that. And, you know, if a fellow wanted to just make predictions about the future, and he wasn't a prophet, but he wanted to make some predictions, could he make some guesses? Couldn't he? But if he wants to protect himself, what is he not going to do? He's not going to tell you when. He's sure not going to put a day limit on it. Joseph says, here's what's going to happen. 3 days you'll be lifted up. By the way, that little phrase is used in two different ways here. One time lifted up, you'll be restored to your office. The other time lifted up, you lose your head. But what he says is in verse 3, it's in 3 days. 3 days. In day 4, what would you know about Joseph? That he's either a liar or a prophet. Jesus said, in 3 days I'll be raised. What would you know on Sunday afternoon? If the body's still in the tomb, he's a liar. If it's not, 3 days. And so then the other guy had the dream, the baker, got these three baskets on his head. The birds came along and ate the food out of the top basket. And he says, what this means is, and on the third day, Pharaoh's birthday, 3 days, you're going to take your head. 3 days. Now, the fact that Joseph could interpret those dreams precisely within a time frame sets the stage for chapter 41. Pharaoh had a dream. His wise men couldn't tell him what it meant. Guess who somebody told him about? Oh, I was in jail. There was this guy in jail I was in jail with. Pharaoh calls for Joseph, tells him the dream, and the rest of the story in the book of Genesis. Would Pharaoh have ever called for Joseph if he had not interpreted those dreams? Would Joseph have ever had the opportunity to interpret those dreams if he had not been thrown in prison? Would Joseph have ever been thrown in prison if this wicked woman had not seduced him? Would this wicked woman have seduced him if his brothers had not sold him into slavery? In chapter 38, it says his brothers brought him to Egypt. Later in the book, it says, God sent me here. A chain of events by the providence of God to carry out a covenant God made to Abraham. And so we see that throughout the book. Any comments? I wanted to note, I don't have any time. But anyway, 1 John 2:16. The three avenues of sin, what are they? Lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, pride of life. So here's the pride of life. Was that tempting to Joseph? Could that have been a problem? Yeah, he was the master of the household right under Potiphar. The lust of the flesh, hear this woman saying, lie with me. Lust of the eyes, of course, here's this woman, and I don't know what she looked like. All these things that are laid before him, he resisted them all. What a great example. What an encouraging story. Okay, our time is up. Lord willing, next week we'll do, next class, we'll do chapters 41 and 42. Thank you.